some chocolate.
You on, Robin?
Yes.
We'll call the council back into session. It's now 7:31. I would ask the council to let the applicant make entire presentation. If you have questions, you have paper and pencil in front of you. Write them down. It's going to be a long evening at the best. Let's not interrupt the applicant when they are making their presentation. Each council will be given an opportunity at least one time through to ask all the questions that you've written down. I think it'll save us some time tonight. So with that rules, we will ask Mr. Griffin to tell you how we run our public hearings here. Mr. Griffin?
Thank you, Mr. Dukes. For those of you who have not been here during a public hearing on a zoning matter, I'm going to run over the rules of procedure briefly. When council holds public hearings on zoning applications, they are considered to be legislative hearings. Council uses the information obtained during the hearings to determine whether to amend the comprehensive zoning map in the manner that is requested by the application at hand. After each application is announced, Lawrence Lank, who's the director of the Planning and Zoning Office, will give a brief report to council on the action, if any, taken by the Planning and Zoning Commission. For your information, Planning and Zoning Commission has deferred, has not made a decision on this application. Therefore, council will do likewise this evening because council's obligated to receive a recommendation from the commission before taking action. After Mr. Lank makes his report, council have an opportunity to ask questions of Mr. Lank. After his report and any questions, then the applicant will be recognized and allowed to make their presentation. After that, and the calling of any witnesses that the applicant has, an opportunity will be given to the public at large to indicate whether you're here in support of or in opposition. If you're here for either side, you would be allowed an opportunity to come forward to the podium and state your position. If you do speak tonight, the first time before you begin your statement, state your name, your address, before you make your comment so that the record could be preserved. And if it had to be transcribed later, we would know who's making each statement. So I would appreciate that courtesy. After people have been recognized who may be here also in support or in opposition, then the council would make a decision. Basically, they probably would vote to defer, but they could also decide whether or not to leave the record open. If the record is closed, then no further evidence can be added to the record. So sometimes on deferrals, the record is left open for a particular purpose. And I believe Planning and Zoning Commission in this application did leave the record open for the receipt of further information. Does anyone have any questions regarding the process? If you have a cell phone, would you please turn it off or turn it to silent service? When people are making a statement, if it's a statement that you disagree with, we would ask that you not make an audible statement from the audience or an interference. We want to run this in an orderly manner. Let each person, when their turn comes, have their say. If you're part of a group and you have a spokesperson, we'd welcome the help of the spokesperson in explaining your individual views, as opposed to 10 people standing up and saying exactly the same thing. Not that you wouldn't be allowed to if you choose to do that. At the conclusion of the hearing, as I've said, council will tell you whether or not any actions to be taken and whether the record will be left open. One other thing is that when these matters were before the Planning and Zoning Commission, they heard all of these applications as one hearing, although they are separate applications. And council has been requested to follow the same procedure. In that regard, we would ask that the applicant, if they are telling us about facts that are peculiar to one application or to two applications out of the six, that they need to give some explanation of which of the applications those peculiar facts pertain to, as opposed to facts that are common to all of the applications. Mr. Lang.
Yes, thank you.
We are giving consideration of these as far as the public hearing together, so I have to introduce all six applications. Change of zone 1615, the application of North Milton Development Group 2 to amend the comprehensive zoning map from an AR1 agriculture residential district to a C1 general commercial district for a certain parcel of land lying and being in Broadkill 100, Sussex County, for land lying north of Route 16, 1,800 feet east of Route 30, to be located on 35.7 acres, more or less. Change zone 1616, the application of North Milton Development Group 2 and 1630 Ventures LLC is an application to amend the comprehensive zoning map from an AR1 agriculture residential district to a C1 general commercial district for a certain parcel of land lying and being in Broadkill 100, Sussex County, for land lying at the southeast corner of Route 16 and Route 30, and also being south of Route 16, to be located on 56.48 acres, more or less. Application change of zone 1617 is the application of North Milton Development Group 1 and North Milton Development Group 2 to amend the comprehensive zoning map from an AR1 agriculture residential district to a HRRPC high density residential district residential plan community for a certain parcel of land lying and being in Broadkill 100, Sussex County, for land lying north of Route 16, east of Route 30, and west of Road 212, also known as Cedar Creek Road, and to be located on 435.67 acres, more or less. Change of zone 1618 is an application of North Milton Development Group 2 and 1630 Ventures LLC is an application to amend the comprehensive zoning map from an AR1 agriculture residential district to an HRRPC high density residential district residential plan community for a certain parcel of land lying and being in Broadkill 100, Sussex County, for land lying south of Route 16, east of Route 30, and west of the town limits of the town of Milton, to be located on 226.41 acres, more or less. Conditional use number 1724 is an application of North Milton Development Group 2 to consider the conditional use of land in an AR1 agriculture residential district for a sewage treatment plant to be located on a certain parcel of land lying and being in Broadkill 100, Sussex County, containing 74.61 acres, more or less, lying east of Route 30, 0.6 miles south of Reynolds Pond Road, being Road 231. And conditional use number 1725, the application of Harry Isaacs Jr. to consider the conditional use of land in an AR1 agriculture residential district for land application of sludge, treated sludge, or any materials containing these materials by spray irrigation to be located on a certain parcel of land lying and being in Broadkill and Cedar Creek 100, Sussex County, containing 1,739.779 acres, more or less, lying on both sides of Route 16, both sides of Route 30, both sides of Road 231, being east of Road 212, and both sides of Route 38. Those are the applications. The commission received comments from the Technical Advisory Committee based on the master plan of the project, and those responded by the TAC committee were November 22nd of 2006. Commission received an exhibit booklet similar to the ones the council has, and the applicants will tell you what the changes are. That is a part of the record. It was presented at the commission meeting on the 25th of January. The commission also received in the presentation for the purpose of the record a copy of the PowerPoint display, which I have for the record, and also a copy of the same on CD, which I also have for the record. We received a letter from the Milton Secretary of the Milton Fire Department Incorporated, based on a letter sent on January 22nd. We were advised that the commission was advised that the department will be able to provide fire protection and fire prevention services to the Elizabethtown project. We also received three letters in opposition. They were from Geraldine Marsh, Mary Ann Johnson, and Joyce and William Stout. The application were represented by John Pardee Esquire and others. The report before council, there are several pages provided by the applicants and their representatives. There were, trying to get my number. The public hearing lasted approximately, or the presentation lasted approximately 2 hours. So the commission, in their question and answer session with the applicants and their representatives, took approximately an hour. And in the opposition, that's referenced in the report, being George Dickerson, town manager of the town of Milton. Jim Walu, I believe is the way he pronounced his name, an adjacent property owner. Wasn't really positive that he was opposed, but he raised some comments. Rebecca Woolman was in opposition. Donna Gordon, Sonia Reeves. Some of their questions were answered by the representative of the application. At the conclusion of the public hearings, the commission asked for a show of hands. There were 16 parties present in support of the project, 10 parties present opposed to the project. In reference to change of zone 1615, the commission deferred action, left the record open for final comments from DelDOT on the traffic impact study. And then upon receipt of the final comments, they'll leave the record open for 15 days for written comments on the traffic impact study comments only. That was the same motion on 1616, 1617, and 1618. All four change of zones, the motion was the same. On conditional use 1724, the application for the sewage treatment facility, action was deferred for further consideration. On conditional use number 1725 for Harry Isaacs Jr., the application was also deferred for further consideration. Late today, we received a fax from the Department of Transportation. I'll pass down copies for the council. It's a letter from the Department of Transportation in reference to the traffic impact study. It's fairly short. The letter concerns the village of Elizabethtown, a 756.88 acre mixed-use development consisting of about 3,710 dwellings of various types, including approximately 400 moderately priced housing units and 413,400 square foot of retail. The mixed-use development would be built on an assemblage of parcels located on the east side of 30, both sides of 16, and west of Cedar Creek Road. All the land is owned AR1. To permit the mixed-use development, the various parcels involved would need rezoning and conditional use approvals. In that regard, the developer's traffic engineer of the traffic group is preparing a traffic impact study, which we expect to receive within the next few weeks. DelDOT does not object to the county approving the rezoning and conditional use application with a stipulation. That stipulation is that this development may move forward through the county approval process to include but not exceed the number of dwelling units that would not require a traffic impact study. And in parenthesis, they reference 214 dwelling units if all are single family detached houses, a somewhat higher number if other dwelling unit types are included. Additionally, the number of units permitted must include a proportionate number of moderately priced housing units. Upon completion of the traffic impact study, the county acceptance of the recommendations for traffic improvements, the developer may proceed with the remainder of the units, including the remainder of the moderately priced housing units. And that was signed by T. William Brockenbrow, Jr., county coordinator with the Department of Transportation. And that's all I have, gentlemen, unless you have questions. Oh, excuse me. For the benefit of the record, the duplicate book for the council meeting, all the councilmen have copies. There is a copy on for the record.
Mr. Lang, I have a question. On the last of the last two of the six applications, 1724 and 25,
right.
You indicated that council deferred, but did they leave the record open or?
No, the motion was to defer for further consideration. That 1724 related sewage treatment, 1725 relates to the spray irrigation and the application of sludge.
Okay.
So they didn't feel it necessary to defer those because they're not related to the traffic impact study that they used for deferral of the other four applications.
So they deferred them all but did not?
They're all deferred, but they did not include or leave the record open
on
for
the last two. I understand. Thank you. Any questions of Mr. Lank by members of council? Is the applicant prepared to go forward?
I assume this needs to go with the Board of Adjustment.
Good evening, Mr. President, respected council members. My name is John Pardee. For the record, I'm an attorney with law firm Prickett, Jones & Elliott, 11 North State Street, Dover, Delaware. It's always a pleasure to visit with you here in God's country, and I hope that you will not hold it against me that I have the regrettable misfortune of hailing from Kent County.
When was the last time you visited us?
I believe it was Returns Day.
Oh, okay. I thought you meant us. Okay.
It's been about two years, probably.
Okay. Just curious.
We want to thank you very much for the opportunity to present to you tonight the Villages of Elizabethtown. We believe that it is perhaps the most unique, exciting, and compelling residential plan community development project ever in Sussex County, if not the state of Delaware. And I'd like to start, if I may, by introducing our project team. And for the record, after tonight's hearing, we will be providing you with a copy of our PowerPoint, so you'll have all of that information as well. But on the screen, you'll see the owners, developers, the environmental consultants, the planners, engineers, surveyors, traffic consultants, marketing consultants, fiscal impact consultants, the land use attorneys, and the water and wastewater company that will be presenting to you tonight. I would submit that it is a veritable A-team of expertise that we've assembled to present the technical merits of this project, and with your patience and indulgence, we'll get through all this as quickly as we can. Resumes for all of the project team are included in your packet at tab 5 of our notebook, and in case anyone has any questions about the qualifications of our team. One matter of housekeeping, and I believe that Mr. Lank may have covered it, but we requested by letter dated January 16 to Mr. Lank that both the Planning and Zoning Commission and the council meetings allow us to proceed with a consolidated hearing on all six applications so that in the interest of time and efficiency we can get through all this and you don't have to listen to the same presentation six times over. So, Mr. President, unless there are any objections, I would ask that we be allowed to proceed on that basis. Thank you, sir.
We'll follow the same process that the commission did in that regard.
Thank you very much. Let me start with just a very brief history of the project by way of background. At tab 25 of our notebook, you'll find a very detailed narrative of the procedural history of the project from its inception. And suffice it to say that the project is born out of a vision conceived by Darren Lockwood, who is a principal in the North Milton Group and a native of the town of Milton. Mr. Lockwood had a vision for a planned residential community which achieves the highest aspirations of livable Delaware. That is, a blend of varied housing alternatives, including affordable housing. This project, as proposed, would include 400 moderately priced housing units, set among complementary neighborhood retail and commercial uses with numerous community amenities, an environmentally sensitive and responsible design incorporating the latest state-of-the-art techniques and best management practices, all supported by developer-funded infrastructure with more than adequate capacity to serve the community itself and more well into the foreseeable future. The project was originally proposed to be annexed into the town of Milton. The developer approached the town, engaged in dialogue, conducted numerous meetings with town officials, including two public hearings. Unfortunately, for reasons that we don't need to dwell on tonight, the developer's annexation proposal simply didn't work out. And hence, in February of 2006, the developer withdrew his annexation application and decided to pursue the project vision with Sussex County, which brings us here tonight. At this time, Mr. President, without objection, I'd like to present for the record an exhibit that I think will help you see kind of the big picture, categorizes the different applications and the number of residential and commercial units proposed for each, if I may approach. What you have before you tonight, as Mr. Lank so aptly indicated, are four rezoning applications and two conditional use applications. Two of the rezoning applications are for properties zoned agricultural residential, and the proposed rezoning would be to C1 general commercial. One of those is located on the north of Route 16. The other is located on the south of Route 16. The other two rezoning applications are applications to rezone properties from AR1 agricultural residential to HRRPC, or high density residential planned community. And again, one of those is on the north side of Route 16 and the other is on the south side of Route 16. The other two applications, as Mr. Lank indicated, are conditional use applications. One is for the regional wastewater treatment plant. That is application number 1724. And the other is for the spray irrigation fields. That is application number 1725. The technical experts that we have assembled for you tonight, as they walk through their presentations, will demonstrate unequivocally that the project complies not only with your comprehensive plan and not only meets or exceeds all code requirements, it is also consistent with livable Delaware and the state strategies. At this point, unless there are any questions, what we'd like to do is proceed with the presentation. You'll see on the slide, we'll talk about planning concepts first. Sean Davis and Randall Arndt are here to present on that. We'll next move into the environmental analysis. Todd Fritchman from EnviroTech will give the presentation on that. Bruce Kreuter from Artesian will present on water. Brian Carball from Artesian will present on the sewage treatment plant. Carl Wilson from the traffic group will talk about the traffic analysis. Joe Cronin will present the marketing analysis. Tom Martins and Molly McKay will present the fiscal impact. Then we'll have plenty of time for whatever questions you may have, and we'll have a brief wrap-up with myself and Mr. Arndt. At this point, I would ask Sean Davis and Randall Arndt to step forward.
Is the PowerPoint laid out for the booklet?
No, sir, it's not, but we will make sure that you have that after tonight's presentation.
Good evening. It's a pleasure to be here with you tonight. My name is Sean Davis. I am a principal with Morris Ritchie Associates. I'm a registered landscape architect, and I've been involved in the planning and design field for over 21 years throughout the United States.
My name is Randall Arndt. I'm a land planner and conservationist and practice based in Narragansett, Rhode Island, but have worked in Sussex County on and off for the last 10 or 15 years.
When we began the planning and design process, something became very apparent very, very quickly. And we are posed with an incredible opportunity here, an opportunity to comprehensively plan 2,500 acres in your county at one time as one community. As opposed to a piecemeal development, we can do 2,500 acres at one time, and that's really incredible. So when we started this process, we established a series of goals and objectives. First and foremost was to provide for a variety of residential home types to fit that various housing needs of the county and the county residents, to incorporate moderately priced housing units throughout the community and in every home type, to provide a variety of retail and employment opportunities within the community that serve the growing region, to incorporate a variety of recreational and open space amenities to serve not only the residents of the community, but the surrounding area, to provide the necessary infrastructure, sewer, water, roads, to serve the community and the existing and future regional development, to protect and enhance the existing environmental features of our site, including wetlands, woodlands, floodplains, sensitive soils, and the list goes on. And finally, and most importantly in our opinion, to respect our neighbors and ensure that the proposed community will blend into our existing and planned development patterns in the local vernacular or local context of the area. So with these goals, we set out and started to analyze the specifics of the property, going macro to micro. Obviously, the property is centrally located in the Milford-Georgetown-Lewis Triad. It has excellent accessibility to the region's roadway networks and excellent accessibility to the beaches, state parks, and all of the regional amenities. It is in a really key location within the county. As described earlier, the property consists of a series of different parcels, 20 in total, totaling over 2,500 acres. There are three distinct areas of the development. The first is the blue area, shown right here, with Route 16 coming through the property and Route 30 bounding its western bounds. That is the proposed development area. The focus for this presentation henceforth from our perspective is really going to be on that blue area. The area that you see in red right here is the proposed sewage treatment facility, just north of the Ingrams Branch and the proposed development area. And finally, the areas that you see in yellow and in green are the proposed spray irrigation fields, both wooded and cropland. So you can see the context of this property within the county. We then embarked on an analysis of the state and local municipal plans to understand the context of how the property lay. And first and foremost, we looked at the state's strategies plan, and the property located here is 16, right here, and 30 heading north-south. The property is located right here. It is contained in levels 1, 2, and a small portion of the property on the northernmost portion of the property associated with the Ingrams Branch is located in level 3 of the state strategies plan. It is important to note, as you will see in the subsequent plans that are presented, that the level 3 area will not be disturbed. There is no proposed development within the level 3 area associated with Ingrams Branch. That area is preserved as an environmental buffer. From the state plan, we move to the county plan, and the property located again with 16 and 30 is highlighted in this dark black outline right here, is shown as a developing area within the county's comprehensive plan. And moving down to the Town of Milton comprehensive plan, although we're not in the Town of Milton, respecting our neighbors, understanding what the town's comprehensive plan says is important to us as well. And what we have identified is the property located here again, 16 and 30, is located right here in the black outline and crosshatch, and it is identified as both a mixed commercial residential area and a residential area as well. So in the state, county, and municipal environment, from a comprehensive planning perspective, this area is proposed for development. And the proposed development is obviously in concert with all of those plans.
In fact, the town plan calls for a maximum of 7 dwellings to the acre, and our proposal comes in at about 5. I think the state target is about 6, so we're slightly below both the state and the town figures, but still very close to what one would consider a good smart growth density.
With an understanding of the comprehensive planning environment, we moved to the specifics of the site. We went out and spent a lot of time on the property, taking a variety of imagery from the site, both around to our neighbors and internal to the site. A couple of things that have become very important. There are excellent view sheds of the existing agricultural uses to our north and to our west, and those will remain because of the proposed spray irrigation fields. The long vistas that we get traveling north on Route 30 and as we travel west on 16, really spectacular agricultural views, and those will obviously remain. There are beautiful views of the existing forested lands, both on the Ingrams Branch and down at Wagaman's Pond and the Pemberton Branch to the south, located on the south side and on the north side. But as you travel through the property along Route 16, you can see these transitional views. What's happening is the land use is beginning to transition out from Milton towards Route 30, and what we're getting is a mixture of commercial and residential uses of varying types and sizes. Moving down to the specifics of the site itself, for orientation purposes, Route 16 is right here. Route 30 runs north-south. The property is outlined in red. Kind of difficult to see in this image. Hopefully you can pick it up. Route 16 acts as basically a divide. Those properties north of 16 drain to the north towards the Ingrams Branch. Those properties south of 16 drain to the south to the Pemberton Branch and Wagaman's Pond. The topography is relatively flat. There are a variety of high points and low points, so the land is very, very undulating, but relatively flat. From a topographic standpoint, that calls out certain things that we need to take into account from a planning perspective. There are limited non-tidal wetlands on the property associated both on the north with the Ingrams Branch, shown here in this light green, and on the south by the Pemberton Branch and Wagaman's Pond, located here in this light green. There is limited forest cover, both along the north and the south, but also some very important hedgerows that run through the property. Those hedgerows, as you'll see, would become very defining characteristics of the future land plan. There are multiple access points into the property from 16, from 30, and from Cedar Creek Road. So there's a variety of different ways to get into the property. And the proximity of the property to our neighboring municipality of Milton, located right here, you can start to see the urban fabric of Milton adjacent to our property. And finally, probably one of the most unique characteristics of the site is a historic cemetery located right here in the woods adjacent to Wagaman's Pond, and that is the former Governor John Ponder's cemetery. We also analyzed the existing vernacular, local architectural vernacular of the area, to make sure that when we are developing this, we're really taking that into context, both from a residential standpoint surrounding the property, as well as from a retail and civic standpoint, making sure that we're, when we talk about architecture and the future of the development, we'll really be picking up on the clues that, from the existing architecture. Now, from a concept, with all that background, with an idea of the development program, we set out to establish a concept. Several key points of the concept. First and foremost is to preserve the existing natural features and use the forest stands and hedgerows as our placemakers within the community. Those are very important elements, and they can become the placemaking identity within the community.
In fact, they were part of the step one of the design process.
Pardon me just a moment. So we could keep the record straight, if you don't mind, when Mr. Arendt starts to contribute again, could you just identify yourself again just by name so that we're clear, and then when Mr. Davis picks up, if you would do the same. Thank you.
Okay. Randall Arendt, stating that this was really part of our design process to begin with the open space areas, not just the unbuildable wetlands and floodplains, but what we call secondary conservation areas that are perfectly buildable, which would normally be kind of knocked down, flattened, graded, and made into house sites. We've got a lot of upland open space in this development property. In fact, most of the area, most of the 265 acres of open space within the 750-acre development area, it's about 30-35% open space, most of that is upland buildable land.
We also wanted to create a there along Route 16, create a heart, I'm sorry, Sean Davis. We also wanted to create a there along Route 16 to create a heart for the community. The most appropriate location for that heart is really along Route 16. It is the center of the property of the proposed development area, and it makes the most sense utilizing the commercial as that heart. We wanted to focus the commercial along both Route 16s and Route 30 because that is, again, the most appropriate location both for the residents and for the surrounding residents that will utilize the commercial as well. We wanted to transition our residential from the higher density homes in the center portion of the property adjacent to the commercial, transitioning out to our neighbors on all sides to single family lower density and open space. We wanted to create a variety of residential neighborhoods with similar home types in each, and provide for a variety of recreational opportunities throughout the community, and as you'll see, with each phase of the development. And then we wanted to interconnect all of these uses through the roadways and pedestrian circulation network. So that's the overall concept, and with that, we developed a detailed site plan. From a statistics standpoint, just to get through some of the statistics, the total development area is 753 acres. The total property that's part of this application is 25, but the total development area is 753 acres. The current zoning is AR, and the proposed zoning is C1 and HR-RPC. The total development area, developed area within this development area, is 485 acres. So of the 753 acres, only 485 are truly developed. The remaining portions of the property are left in open space. This includes all the residential areas, the retail, the mixed use, the road right-of-ways, and all the alleys and lanes. Within the 485 acres, we are proposing 3,710 homes. And those are broken down, as you can see here, into single-family detached, single-family duplexes, single-family attached townhomes, multifamily, and multifamily above the retail. And in order to service those 3,710 homes, we are proposing 413,000 square feet of retail space. In total, there are 271 acres of open space in the community, or approximately 35% of the site will be retained as open space. That's a wonderful statistic. We've identified 9 separate home types within the community. They're color-coded here, so you can see the distribution of how they lay, with the higher density homes in the center, adjacent to the commercial, transitioning out to our lower density homes around our neighboring properties. We've also designed and included in your booklet is an 8.5 by 11 detail for each one of these home types, establishing design standards, setbacks, height, relationships to roads, and other uses. They're illustrated here in small form just for context. We developed a roadway hierarchy system And as Randall had mentioned earlier, the hierarchy, the roadways and the open spaces become kind of the form-giving elements of the master plan. How we lay out our roads, trails, and open space system establishes our neighborhoods. This graphic illustrates those four four road types. In total, there's approximately 1.4 miles of what we're identifying as 120-foot-wide boulevarded road. And those are shown in this orange, circumnavigating through the north and south. Those are the major kind of access points into the community off of Route 16. They're 120 foot wide with a median in the center that's large enough to handle, a 50 foot median in the center, it's large enough to handle a meandering 12 foot pathway, which we'll talk about in a minute. Those are very, very strong elements coming in off 16 to create a very strong sense of identity for all of the residents. There are 2.6 miles of what we're calling collector roads, and those are shown in red here, connecting Cedar Creek over through Route 30, connecting down and to Route 16, and then south of 16, bisecting the property. If I was to flip back, you can see how these roadways are interconnecting all of these various neighborhoods. There's 14.5 miles of neighborhood roads shown in blue, and then there's 13.2 miles of neighborhood lanes or alleys shown in green. In total, there's 31.7 total miles of roads within the community, all paid for by the developer, all maintained by the homeowners association, and in perpetuity. They're not going to be maintained by the county. These are going to become part of the homeowners association for their maintenance program. We've also identified a specific standard for each one of these roads, which again, a more detailed example of that is contained in your booklet. From the open space planning standpoint, there are two major types of open space planned in the community. The first is what we call the active open space. This is where the kids will be able to play ball, large open space areas, neighborhood parks, best pocket parks. Those are shown in dark green throughout the community. And you can see in this illustration how they are spread throughout the community, both on the north and the south. It's a very equal distribution. Every neighborhood has a neighborhood, at least one neighborhood park shown in these green areas. So you can see the variety of recreational active open space areas within the community are pretty extensive. In addition, there's 151 acres of passive open space areas. These are areas for tree preservation, forest preservation. The area that we've identified as the level three state strategies area on the northernmost portion of the property is contained in passive open space, forest conservation, environmental buffers, which will be discussed momentarily by Todd Frischman. And also by the south, along Pemberton Branch and the Wagamans Pond. In total, 271 acres, as we've mentioned, and 35% total open space. There are 1.4 miles of 12-foot wide trails through the community. Those trails are really located and associated with a boulevard. Down the center of the boulevard, all up the boulevard, there's a 12-foot wide meandering trail. It'll be very nice for residents to be able to cross in, and it'll be a very wonderful environment to them, for them to walk through. There are 7.2 miles of 8-foot wide trails, which kind of circumnavigate the community, along buffers along Route 30 and Cedar Creek, down through some of this passive open space areas and connecting some of the active open space areas. And finally, there are 33.7 miles of 5-foot wide sidewalks on both sides of all of the streets.
Randall Arndt chiming in again. All along Cedar Creek Road and Route 30, we're proposing 100-foot wide buffers, wooded buffers with bikeways. And for the most part, homes will be facing onto the 30 and Cedar Creek instead of backing up to them in the normal way. In other words, we take seriously the traditional town planning principles of not turning your back on the community by putting backyards facing the roads, which is the, I think, the least desirable way to plan a community in terms of either living with your backyard facing the highway, or in terms of driving down the highway and looking back at pressure-treated decks and sliding glass doors.
Through the traditional planning principles that have been employed throughout the community, our focus really is on the streetscape. That's why some of these statistics regarding our total roadways and sidewalks and whatnot is so important. The cars are really going to be in the backs of the homes, in the alleys, the lanes. And the focus is really going to be on the front of the architecture, away from the car. There are some really critical opportunities here. A great example, specific example, is some of these smaller neighborhood parks located right here. Those are completely bound by the roadway, and all the homes front out onto them. So they've really become everybody's open space, not just the neighborhoods, but everybody in that neighborhood and in the community can access that, walk to it. It's not behind somebody's home, and when you walk back there, you feel like you're kind of intruding on their privacy. These are all kind of public open spaces throughout the community. Another great example of how the traditional neighborhood design principles really interact is some of the access points. For example, we mentioned that Governor Ponder's cemetery is located right here. And there is direct access from Route 16 all the way down to the governor's cemetery site without ever interacting with a driveway. You're going to be looking at the fronts of homes, driving down the boulevard, around a roundabout element in the center of the community to slow traffic down, and then down through this community, again, focusing on the fronts of homes. So there's a lot of detailed planning that's been that has gone into this overall site plan and the open space plan. We also looked at design prototypes for these types of uses, taking these prototypes and marrying them with the architectural vernacular that we had talked about before with the town, looking at both residential prototypes that we can employ. This is a great example of some homes that are really fronting out onto some of these neighborhood parks. Another great, fantastic example of how that concept works really well. And the variety of different homes, from single family homes to duplex homes, to the small single family homes and townhomes, to multifamily, and to residential over retail, a concept we'll discuss momentarily. And then also from the civic and commercial uses, what are the types of uses that we would be incorporating? Well, there are two civic sites immediately north of 16, adjacent and between the commercial and residential portions of the property. And those could have a daycare or church facility or a public building, public safety building. This is one of the things we'll talk about momentarily. Then we developed a series of character sketches because, you know, a picture does say a couple thousand words. In this particular instance, this is looking south from Route 16, looking north of Route 16. Route 16 is in the foreground here, and this is the main boulevard running back up to the open space system, the major open space system on the north portion of the property, and how the retail with the residential above will really face the street out to 16, to really embrace 16. So when passerbyers come through, they're not going to be looking at a sea of parking. They're going to be looking at some quality architecture that really embraces the street with a very strong streetscape, and how that interacts with the residential behind, the two civic uses that we had talked about, the church or the daycare, public safety building, and then how that interacts with the attached villas or the townhomes, and then the single family residential. What we're really trying to establish is an identity along 16 that is completely different from anything that's been seen before, to create that there. But we also have to recognize the reality of some of the retail uses that are necessary in this part of the county for those types of uses. Those could include some of our larger format retail, like a home improvement or a grocer. Those are most aptly located at the intersection of 16 and 30, south of 16, where they can get the traffic movements off of 16 and 30 for people who may not be coming east off of 30, where they can pull in and then pull back out. But architecturally, it's going to be treated similarly to what you saw north of 16 from a retail perspective. And from a landscape architecture standpoint, the buffers that will be proposed, this is 16 and this is 30, the buffers that would be located along Route 16 and how the architecture faces the access way. So when you're driving into the community, it'll obviously be similar from an architectural vernacular. A detailed landscape or detailed this character sketch of what that proposed boulevarded street would be, and how we have sidewalks on both sides, kind of the meandering street with a variety of different activities within that median of the boulevard, and how the architecture really faces the street and is pulled up close to the street without the garages. The garages are in the back.
How wide is the median?
And the median is proposed as 50 feet wide. So there's a 50-foot median within the center of the roadway. And finally, as Randall had mentioned, along both Route 30 and Cedar Creek, we are proposing a minimum of 100-foot buffer. Within that buffer, we will propose an 8-foot-wide multi-purpose trail for bike access, walking trails, pedestrian access. The homes will front out onto Route 30 and Cedar Creek to embrace the community with the existing, as opposed to backing out, putting the berm up, landscaping it, saying, well, we're here and you're there. No, we really want to embrace it. An opportunity for reforestation to create and soften the views of the community. Two final images from our perspective. First is the phasing plan. There are 10 total phases in the community. Beginning in 2008, phases will run over a 10 to 15 year period. Each phase will contain approximately 400 homes. The retail will be developed in phases 2, 5, and 10. The first retail coming online in phase 2 right here. And then subsequently the remaining portion, this would be phase 5, and this is phase 10. And then the community recreation will be incorporated with every phase of the development. So for example, on the north side, this first phase will bring in this, you know, when we develop on the north side, this phase will bring in this major recreational amenity as well as all the neighborhood parks. The major recreational amenity on the south side will be developed in the first phases as well to provide for that mixture. And last but not least, one of the most important elements of this proposal is the moderately priced housing units. As was discussed earlier, the MPHUs will be included in all 10 phases of the development beginning in 2008. The MPHUs will be incorporated in each one of those phases in all different home types. What we have shown on this illustration is how the MPHUs have been sprinkled throughout the community as opposed to concentrated in one area. So they're in every different home type, in every different phase, throughout the entire community. When we began this process, we established the goal of being able to create a special place and take advantage of an opportunity, which is really not very common nowadays, to comprehensively plan 2,500 acres at one time as one community. We hope that you have realized a tremendous amount of effort has gone into the planning and design process, and we think we've been able to accomplish that goal by creating an award-winning community on a small portion of the property while retaining the agricultural beauty of the remaining portion of the property, and I thank you for your time.
Final note for me, if this number of units were developed in the standard, normal, conventional way, it would consume about 3,500, 3,600 acres. The developed part of this property is 750 acres, and of which is 270 of the 750 is open space. So you can see that this really is anti-sprawl. The normal way of doing it would be to cover 3,700 acres of land with house lots and streets and very little parkland.
Thank you very much for your time. At this time, I'd like to introduce Todd Frischman from EnviroTech to discuss the environmental elements of the plan.
Good evening, Councilman. My name is Todd Frischman. I'm an aquatic biologist with EnviroTech Environmental Consulting. I reside at number 10, South Lake Terrace, Rehoboth Beach, Delaware. My expertise in the field includes a decade of applied environmental management services to the subdivision situation in Sussex, Kent, and Newcastle, also municipal situations here in the county, as well as corporate environmental management services. What I'm here to discuss with you tonight is the Villages of Elizabethtown Comprehensive Open Space Management Plan. I think that we have a unique situation here because of the environmental conditions, the existing environmental conditions on the Pemberton Branch and the Ingrams Branch. And I'm going to allude on those now. I would like to submit for the record the Villages of Elizabethtown Comprehensive Open Space Management Plan. What we have done here is taken down the template of the open space and essentially broken this down into ecosystem status or microclimate status. As you can see, we take the existing pond slash impoundment and proposed stormwater retention basins and consider that as open water management unit. We take the existing riparian buffers associated with and associated wetlands and upland forests. Again, in conjunction with the Ingrams and the Pemberton branch that are direct contributors to the Broadkill River watershed. We take the mixed-use green spaces, which are shaded this color, and we take the open water of the discrete conveyances of water of the U.S., the Ingrams branch, and the Pemberton branch, including the Waggaman's Pond. The generalized goals of our open space management plan include water quality, enhancing water quality through physical processes as well as natural processes, which I'll allude to as we go through here a little further. We've paid a lot of attention to the natural heritage. These critical ecosystems found on both of these branches are a specific ecosystem that once dominated our region, the Atlantic White Cedar Swamp. The town of Milton has a lot of historical significance in terms of the Atlantic White Cedar in the shipbuilding industry, in the furniture building industry, and both of these ecosystems do exist on the site at this time. So we're going to take advantage of that, and I'll explain how as we go along. We are going to increase habitat. We're going to extend habitat corridors from these critical ecosystems into the community. Biological diversity, we're going to extend and enhance the biological diversity, especially through the stormwater management situations and the regeneration units that will include in and around the natural or the existing buffers that are currently there. We're going to improve aesthetics, the recreational component, and we're also going to provide educational outreach and environmental interpretation to the community through the Homeowners Association, through the proposed YMCA, so that we promote stewardship within this community so that these ecosystems are preserved and conserved adequately. Water quality, the method. We have developed a comprehensive water quality management plan and implementation plan, which is comprehensive to the true sense of the word, which I'll demonstrate to you as we proceed. The natural heritage, what our goal is to extend the habitats from these critical ecosystems throughout the community green space. We've conducted the geological and biological research. We've done an elaborate existing vegetation condition study. We know what is present on this site down to the stems per acre. And we've also studied the hydrology associated with these critical ecosystems and microclimates. Through this natural heritage, we're also going to provide the educational outreach to build stewardship and pride within the community to preserve and conserve these natural ecosystems. Some of the historical review items that we found are specifically on the Atlantic White Cedar here in the Delmarva Peninsula. So this is very valid literature. We're going to increase habitat method. We're going to incorporate, we're going to incorporate native beneficial vegetation into the proposed landscape plan. In other words, we know what thrives in these critical ecosystems, and we're going to select species such as the Atlantic White Cedar, such as black walnut, flowering dogwood, American holly, loblolly, and we're going to include those species into the landscape plan. We're not going to use the traditional Leland cypress, crepe myrtle, those types of things. We're going to stem this through the community. We also plan on installing into the stormwater retention facilities, planting the bench shelves with emergent growth vegetation that is native, flower-bearing, broad-leafed, showy, pre-treats water before discharge, provides habitat, and, of course, the aesthetic appeal to the community. And these will all be specced out and selected specifically for the microclimate, a saturated soil up to the upland. Biological diversity, again, we're going to take advantage of the existing conditions, and we're going to promote the existing conditions through the community corridors. We're going to create successional units in association with the existing buffers so that these will be essentially what we call no-mow zones. They will be managed through what we call integrated vegetation management practice. We will install adequate nesting sites, and we will conduct wildlife management for native nuisance species, such as the Canada goose, any muskrats that might intrude into the stormwater facilities and cause structural damage to embankments and so forth. We're going to control the exotic invasive vegetation that currently exists on the site. We have some of the species I'm sure that everyone is familiar with, Phragmites australis, multiflora rose, tree of heaven, and we have the native nuisance greenbrier, Japanese honeysuckle, which is actually an exotic. So we're actually going to be enhancing the watershed by removing this exotic invasive seed base. These species of plants will no longer be able to distribute their seeds into the broadkill and spread throughout that critical watershed. We're going to selectively remove those through BMPs and propagate the good. This is done through integrated vegetation best management practices, all the proper licensing through the state agencies, qualified staff, equipment, and products will be used, EPA-registered products that are environmentally sound. Aesthetics, obviously, we'll be improving aesthetics, specifically in the stormwater retention facilities by planting out the bench shelves, as I alluded to before, with the proper native vegetation that will pre-treat this water, provide the critical habitat, and the aesthetic amenity that the community would deserve. Recreational component, we are going to include these stormwater retention facilities in the existing impoundment as recreational amenities that would be governed by the HOA. We would obviously consult and provide guidance, trash in, trash out, catch and release, set up guidelines, and so forth. Stockings, mosquito control, all that will be included. We will provide the educational outreach to the community with inquiry-based activities that are hands-on. We will bring the ecosystem to the participant, again, in an inquiry-based situation, and this is, again, to promote stewardship so that we have a community that supports the ecosystems and doesn't cause human erosion and other destructive behaviors, negative human impact in these ecosystems. The open space management unit will be enhanced and maintained with active environmental management services. This is not the traditional situation. When we say active, that means the services will be conducted at a duration and frequency sufficient enough to provide tangible results. The open space will be broken down into individual management units, each with a different best management practice. The management units include ponds, wetlands, and stormwater management areas, i.e. surface water, the riparian buffers and regeneration areas, or successional units, ditches and streams, and drainage swales, the existing forested areas, and then the active or the mixed-use green spaces. Management unit number one, the open water. Obviously, our goal is to follow regulatory agency policy, DENREC, Sussex Conservation District, EPA, all of that. We want to promote soil stabilization. We want to enhance the water quality, control exotic invasive and nuisance flora and fauna, maintain a diversity efficient wildlife habitats, provide an interpretation of the ecosystem. The method, truly comprehensive. We will cover everything from mosquito control by employing the eastern mosquito fish into these stormwater retention ponds, biological control, the vegetation enhancements, managing the waterfowl, cyanobacteria, and algae blooms will all be controlled and managed. Management unit number two, the buffers, the existing buffers, and the areas that we allow to regenerate will be managed with integrated vegetation practices, which means that we will use the best process to eliminate that particular species. If you're dealing with Phragmites, you've got to use systemic herbicides, or you will not get rid of it. Same with multiflora rose. If you're dealing with some of the others, it might be selective pruning, whatever the best method is for that species. And again, just alluding to some of the species that do exist on the site now that we will be eradicating. All the indigenous beneficial grasses, shrubs, and trees will be left intact and propagated. Pruning the beneficial vegetation may take place if necessary to lift canopies and provide view corridors and so forth. This shows just the plot where we set up quadrats on this particular branch here, the Ingram branch. to the north, where we determined the existing conditions, ran that through a formula to determine the number of stems per acre of vegetation that we have present on the system. Again, we've got some great things, Atlantic white cedar, black walnut, flowering dogwood, smooth alder, on and on. Management unit number three, the ditches and streams. Obviously, we want to provide drainage outlet for excess water that exceeds the infiltration ability of the soils within a specific watershed. This will decrease the chances of flooding of the property, roadways, and dwellings. Will decrease public safety issues and decrease negative economic impact. The method, appropriate stormwater runoff and retention, pre-discharge treatment. The ponds, stormwater ponds, will be lined entities, so we'll be protecting groundwater. They'll be highly vegetated, managed, aerated if necessary to keep dissolved oxygen concentrations adequate. The vegetated slopes and channels will be void of large woody stem trees that might topple, pull soils with them, restrict flow, and so forth. The bank channel and pipe inlet and outlet stabilization, we will use the appropriate products and follow Delaware Pond Code, obviously. Installation of the riparian corridors, quarterly inspections of the streams and ditches, and we will allow for the maintenance easements when necessary. The forested areas, our purpose is to allow for the propagation of a climax community forest through natural successional processes. We want to promote the biodiversity, promote the wildlife habitat, the educational outreach abilities, improve the aesthetics and water quality, and provide, with all this open space, ample recharge to groundwater and infiltration of impervious surface water runoff. The forested areas, again, will be maintained with integrated vegetation management practices. However, we will monitor these areas for deadfall accumulation, for fire mitigation, and we may raise the canopy to improve the understory and clear it up for some view corridor and recreational amenity in there. The mixed green spaces, the purpose, to provide the urban dweller with areas for passive and active recreational activity, educational outreach opportunity, increase pervious surface for infiltration, and enhance the aesthetics. These will be maintained through conventional best management practices for turf application, as described by the Professional Landscape Land Care Network, PLANET, which is basically setting the standard for turf management in the United States at this time. We also will implement the best nutrient management practices for the turf application. Questions?
I think we indicated that at the outset the questions would come at the end.
Okay, at this time, I would like to introduce Bruce Croyder with Artesian. Thank you.
Todd. I'm Bruce Croyder. I'm Vice President of Planning and Engineering for Artesian Resources Operating Utilities. Our corporate address is 664 Churchman's Road, Newark, Delaware. I'd like to thank you all for allowing us to present this evening. Artesian is an investor-owned water utility with total capitalization, total plant in the ground, so to speak, of in excess of $200 million of utility plant. We have currently 200 employees dedicated to providing the highest quality service to the communities that we do serve. Artesian Resources provides both water and wastewater services throughout the state of Delaware. We're currently serving a population of nearly a quarter million here in Delaware, which translates roughly to 30% of the population of the state. We own and operate our water and wastewater facilities. Operations are with licensed and experienced staff. And both our water and our wastewater utilities are regulated by the Public Service Commission, regulated being several fold. First, in terms of the minimum level of service standards that are required, and then second, ultimately, in the rates that we are allowed to charge our customers. With respect to the Elizabethtown project, we anticipate a water demand of about 1.2 million gallons a day. To serve the nearly 4,000 homes and the commercial centers. We anticipate securing that water through groundwater supplies located in the open space on the project. And those supplies will involve test drilling to determine hydrogeologic conditions, test pumping to determine safe yields, and ultimately that work would translate to application permits from the state of Delaware, Department of Natural Resources. Treatment plant we anticipate being located near the wastewater treatment plant. Treatment of water really varies by water quality. In this case, we'd anticipate, quite frankly, treating for iron, iron being a natural mineral constituent that's widespread in the groundwaters throughout the state of Delaware. All treatment would be to state and federal drinking water standards. And the treatment plant itself, as you'll see momentarily, we pride ourselves on the use of an architecture which really blends into the community. Again, in the right, or in the red, is the wastewater treatment plant site, and in the rectangular box, right, we basically have a blow up here. In the southeastern portion of that site, basically we have reserved area for the water treatment plant and for elevated water storage. The intention here is to locate the facility as far off of the roadway as possible, and in the southern portion of the site so that we're bounded on the woods on the south and agricultural preserve on the east. Typical of our water treatment facilities. This is a 700,000 gallon a day iron removal facility. It's the first home you come to, so to speak, as you enter a subdivision just outside of Middletown. Another facility located in an agricultural area west of Middletown in Horse Country. And this is a facility actually located right next to the community center in the subdivision of Stonewater Creek, located on Route 5, just south of Harbison. And again, I'd like to come back on the elevated storage here, if I may. We anticipate, again, locating the facility on the wastewater treatment plant site as far off of the road, and in effect, as far away from the neighbors as we possibly can. We're proposed to install 1.5 million gallons in the air, 1.5 million translating roughly to a day's storage. Why? Emergency storage, when everything else goes wrong, there still is water service to the community, provides for fire protection, and it maintains constant pressure on the system. I'd now like to turn the podium to Brian Carbaugh. Brian is Artesian's Director of Engineering Design. I did get it right.
Thank you, Bruce. My name is Brian Carbaugh. As Bruce said, I'm a professional engineer. I'm the Director of Engineering Design for Artesian Resources Corporation, specifically managing wastewater projects. My office is located in our southern office at 2832 Lewis Georgetown Highway with a Milton address. I think you had asked, my presentation will be specifically related to the wastewater aspects of the project, which are conditional use 1724, for the wastewater treatment facility, and conditional use 1725 for the areas that will be irrigated with treated wastewater. The Elizabethtown wastewater project is proposed to serve both the Elizabethtown with the ability to provide additional regional wastewater infrastructure, including the ability to serve adjacent municipal needs through a phased wastewater treatment plant development concept. We have secured over 1,600 acres of land that are already in ag land preservation. It includes both cultivated and forested areas for our irrigation with treated wastewater in accordance with both DNREC and Department of Agriculture requirements. The drawing here shows the proposed Elizabethtown project, our treatment plant site in red, and the 1,600 plus acres of land that is in agricultural preservation in and around the community that would be used for irrigation. Next slide here is our is that proposed treatment plant site that's identified in red. We're actually turned sideways here from, I think, the way you've seen the everything on the project before. North is to your left. Route 30 is down on the bottom of the slide here. What we envision, we have a requirement for biological treatment. These would be the biological treatment ponds back here, proposed to be developed in at least three phase. We have clarification, we have sand filtration treatment, and then these are the clean water storage lagoons that are used for seasonal application and for managing the water for irrigation needs. These would front up on Route 30. So what you would see from Route 30 would really just be a grassy knoll going up to the lagoons, which would be a little higher in elevation than existing grade. We think that provides a good buffer for passing traffic and keeps us in the well in the vicinity of the project, the Elizabethtown project. The DNREC and the Department of Ag have looked at this issue of spraying on ag land preservation and have established the highest standards for spray irrigation when spray is occurring on ag land preservation lands. The goal here is to actually improve the land for agricultural production of conventional cash crops through using recycled water. The required treatment is to the same standards that are used for irrigation of what's referred to as unlimited public access sites. These are sites such as parks and golf courses. It's the same water you could spray out on a park while people were playing in the park. That's the level that we're treating to and spraying on these ag land preservation areas. What's required is advanced treatment with high levels of treatment and advanced disinfection. The treatment is required to consist of biological oxidation, clarification, coagulation and flocculation of the tiniest particles that get through clarification, and then filtration of those to produce the cleanest water, which then gets the highest level of disinfection. The one thing that that tends to interfere with disinfection is if you have some particulates there that might hide that last little critter that you're trying to get to. The treatment levels are required to be as high or higher than are required for any surface water discharge or any other treatment level in the state of Delaware. That's BOD and suspended solids, less than 10 milligrams per liter, and turbidity, the cloudiness of the water, less than 10 turbidity units, as well as disinfection standards for the water. The spray irrigation to ag land preservation requires that we are recycling a precious water and nutrient resource. It's important that that we get this water back into the environment. You'll see that's part of Artesian's process for water management. And we are irrigating for crop utilization and uptake rather than some other spray irrigation is really irrigating specifically for wastewater disposal. We look at lower loadings, but we, in this particular case, we have an exceptional amount of land on which to spray. The project has been reviewed with both DNREC and the Department of Agriculture. Both agencies endorse this proposed wastewater system in accordance with the standards that they have established for spray irrigation on ag land preservation sites. DNREC has reviewed the preliminary soils, and the second item that you have at tab 10 in your booklet is their review and positive comment on that. Just some pictures here so you can get something in your mind. These are wastewater lagoons, storage, and some treatment lagoons. These are located at the town of Middletown. From the air, you see a whole lot of water. From the ground, you see a little knoll of grass coming up. The irrigation equipment is exactly what you see in the agricultural community. We're using the same kind of equipment that's used agriculturally to land apply wastewater. Again, Artesian looks to making sure that our treatment facilities are properly enclosed and compatible with the community. When we're in an agricultural area, we try to make our enclosed treatment facilities look like agricultural buildings. Bruce Corridor had mentioned the water treatment plant at Stonewater, which is located in the community. Looks like a community home. The wastewater treatment plant is located on the edge of the community, more in a rural area, and looks like a an agricultural building. This is an agricultural-style building, barn building, that houses the wastewater treatment plant at the reserves of Lewis Landing project. Leave you with our Artesian's water management plan, which is to take the water out of the ground, use it, and put it back where we found it. We take water from underground aquifers, is where we get water in Sussex County. We treat it. If there's iron or other contaminants that need to be removed, we treat it so that it's acceptable for residential use and meets all drinking water standards. Of course, after it's used there, it has certain characteristics of its own. We provide wastewater treatment to treat that to the highest standards so that it's applicable for reuse, which reinjects it back into the ground, back into the aquifers, so it's ready to complete that cycle again. I look forward to any questions that you might have at the end of the presentation, and I'd like to introduce Carl Wilson of the Traffic Group.
Good evening. My name is Carl Wilson. I'm a project manager with the Traffic Group. My address is 9900 Franklin Square Drive, Suite H in Baltimore. I'm a professional engineer and certified professional traffic operations engineer through ITE, the Institute of Transportation Engineers. I have a Bachelor's of Science degree and a Master of Engineering degree through the University of Maryland. My firm has been preparing the traffic impact study for the villages of Elizabethtown, and tonight I'm going to present an overview of the process. First, I'd like to submit for the record a copy of the preliminary traffic impact study and the letter approving that from DLDOT.
Thank you. Be made part of the record.
In the traffic impact study process, the first step is to obtain a scope of work from DLDOT. In the case of the villages of Elizabethtown, DLDOT's instructed us to study 15 off-site intersections. That includes major intersections located within 6 miles of the site, and of course, all site access points. Here's an overview of the bounds of our study area. To the north, we're studying up to Route 1 and Cedar Creek. Over to the west, we're studying to US 113. Over to the east, we're at Route 1 and Route 16, and then down to the south at Sand Hill Road. DLDOT's recognized with the size of this development how important it is that all the traffic can efficiently reach arterial roads. As part of the first submission we made to DLDOT, the traffic count and distribution submittal, we collected turning movement counts during the morning, evening, and Saturday peak periods. All the counts were collected during the summer months, which in Sussex County represents a worst case condition. DLDOT does require us to use a seasonal adjustment factor for the morning and evening peak periods, and that was applied and approved by them. In addition, during the traffic count submittal, we prepared distributions for traffic. And what that is, that essentially provides the origins and destinations for site traffic. It shows where the traffic's expected to disperse to the roadway network and where it's going to be arriving to the site from. This information was submitted to and approved by DLDOT. The second stage of the submittal, which is what has I just submitted to the record, is the preliminary traffic impact study. And that essentially builds on the first submittal. We add some more information to it. First thing is regional growth rates. These are developed by DLDOT, and what they account for is small developments or any other new developments outside of the study area that we need to account for traffic. This is approximately 1 to 3% per year up to our design year of 2019. There are eight specific background developments that DLDOT instructed us to include. And what that does is that provides a comprehensive look at all the traffic that's expected to be on the roadway network by the year 2019. Most importantly, we do prepare the trip generation for the site at this stage. For the mixed-use nature of this with the residential and retail units, there will be on-site trips. On-site trips represent a deduction from overall network trips that'll be trips that occur between the retail and the residential uses. In addition, there's pass-by trips that are deducted for the retail use. And what a pass-by trip is a vehicle that's already on the roadway network, stopping at the retail development, to use the retail development on the way to a final destination. The trip generation for the site, which again was approved by DelDOT, results in 1,746 morning trips, 2,541 evening trips, and 3,029 Saturday trips. And a trip, of course, represents both inbound and outbound movements. This is a very conservative estimate for the site because it assumes full build-out of standard residential units and doesn't account for any possible active adult units. Right now, we're in the process of preparing the final TIS, and this builds on the submittal of the preliminary traffic impact study. We use analysis and methodology standards required by DelDOT to establish existing background and total analysis of figures for the intersections. As part of this, we're going to make recommendations for improvements to provide acceptable operations at each of the intersections, both off-site and site access points. Part of the improvements that we'll recommend will be traffic signals, when warranted, and geometric improvements. These improvements will provide an acceptable level of service or completely mitigate site impact as necessary. DelDOT will comprehensively review this final traffic impact study and ultimately approve. And as previously stated, DelDOT has indicated in a letter dated today that this process can continue through the zoning approval process up to building 214 units.
Say that again, please.
DelDOT submitted a letter today that said that the zoning process can continue up to building 214 units, which is what their threshold is for acquiring a traffic impact study. That's the letter that Mr. Lank read earlier today. At this point, I'd like to turn the presentation over to Joe Cronin from Littman, Frizzell, and Mitchell.